Welcome to part two of our conversation about the Warren team returning to the Conjuring House with Eric Vitale. When you are in there at the beginning and before anything is even, you know, really getting, you know, in depth into the investigation, you said you're hearing disembodied voices. You're just feeling kind of uncomfortable, kind of odd. Are others on your team at the same time hearing these disembodied voices as well? Or is this more of a phenomenon where you, being you, are just able to are picking them up with your own abilities?
Well, I mean, there was like 12 of us. So when we were able to just like do our thing and set up, mm-hmm. we kind of just scattered like kids on a playground. It took us a while to set up the equipment because we were excited. So, I mean, others were experiencing things being touched and things like that. It wasn't just me. Everyone had experiences in the house. I'm going over my notes right now. I remember, when was it? All right. So there was at one point, it was sometime after, midnight, and we were doing a spirit box session in a closet upstairs, and I remember the floor started to shake and a voice told us to leave, and one of the investigators was in the closet by himself, and then the little piece of metal was actually thrown at him from the other side of the closet, and then another investigator went in to check, and then he got grabbed, and then a voice said, "I'll kill you," and then the number 24, that was actually the age of the investigator that was grabbed. So that's just another thing that happened when we were there.
When you get a message like that, "I'll kill you," and then the number 24, obviously you know who it's directed at. The individual knows who it's directed at. Is there any fear that they could actually follow through on their promise or on their threat?
Me personally, I try to never show any fear. And whoever I'm with, whatever their religious beliefs are, I pray for everyone. I envision everyone in a halo of white light, a Christ light. That's something that Ed and Lorraine always told people to do. And I just feel like my faith protects me and the people that I'm with. You can't show fear, especially if you are in the presence of a demonic entity, because they'll feed off of that fear. It'll make them even stronger. It'll create stronger manifestations. Mm-hmm. And you don't want that. You don't want anyone to get hurt.
When you're, I mean, that's how you practice, and that's good. And you follow, you know, some, you know, protection, you know, policies, for lack of a better term, or procedures. Yes. But obviously not everybody does. Do you believe that if someone was to get that message and there wasn't essentially that strong protection going into this, more so a type of individual who would go in there, taunt, ask to be hurt, things of that nature, but doesn't really go into, "I'm going to protect myself beforehand." I'm curious about this, whether this building, this case specifically, or others in general, have there been any sort of evidence or things that point to the investigation that one went on, and a threat that was made, and then a fairly close after demise, you know, at the time of the investigation, connecting to a threat that something made to an individual?
I remember a few times over the years being... I spoke about this the last time you had me on with the Borgs Woods case.
Yeah.
When we were with we were a handful of investigators, and a voice had said, "I'm going to make them sick." And then these girls actually started vomiting.
Yeah.
And then for a while they started having nightmares, and things started happening at their house. I don't think they were spiritually sound like I am. If I remember correctly, they didn't really believe in any of that stuff. So if that helps answer your question a little bit, it definitely helps to have faith and to believe in something.
Mm-hmm. is the threat greater of having something connect to you and then you take it home as a parting gift versus imminent demise, you know, of someone, something saying it's going to kill you, but maybe it doesn't have the power to necessarily kill you, but it can make your life pretty difficult or a living hell if you taunt it too much, which could inadvertently turn into a demise of some sort, you know, just by circumstance, you know, by distraction, and boom, you went off the road or something like that. Not necessarily that it steered your car off the road, but because you were...
Yeah, there's plenty of things that have happened like that.
Yeah. So when you go into a place like this that has all this activity, we've been talking a lot about Bathsheba, but who are some of the other spirits that you believe are haunting this house?
Well, I do know there was a few gentlemen there that died of suicide. Can't remember all their names. I remember there was a gentleman that he drank poison and he just died outside. There was a couple of hangings that were there. I know that there's I believe there's four men. We actually went with a psychic medium, just to backtrack a little bit, and when we were on the way there, she kept getting images of a woman that was soaked in blood. I think that might have been Bathsheba after she sacrificed her child. And there was an angry man that didn't want us to come to the house, but she kept seeing four dead men watching from the woods. And we went on to find out those were the men that there was men that froze to death on the property. There's been a lot of death on the property. I'd have to go back actually and like do some more research, but there's plenty of spirits there, human and inhuman.
Why do you believe there is so much death on this specific property?
I mean, it could be that the land is cursed. I don't know if it's necessarily the curse that apparently Bathsheba put on the land. It could have been prior to her putting this curse on. Mm-hmm. Years prior, people just dying there. Like I said, there were suicides. There had to be something bad that happened there years ago for all this death to just occur there. I mean, there's like a grocery list of death that has happened there, you know, before and after Bathsheba.
Yeah.
The story of Bathsheba.
It's an interesting thing to think about, because it makes you wonder, you know, was Bathsheba just another one in the long line of people who were caught up in something with this property? And was she attempting to try, you know, was she, you know, not necessarily trying to make it worse, but did she think maybe this is the direction to go to rid the property of whatever is going on by tapping into the dark world of this negativity that seems to surround it with the suicides and so many other things?
Or maybe that's what attracted her to it.
Maybe.
First place.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, I'm just trying to think of every, you know, possible angle to go at it from, that maybe not, you know, not just the easy route of here's, you know, what we know from the movie, or here's what we know from the books, or here's what we know from the investigations, other perspectives of looking at it.
Yeah.
When you look at this house and certain rooms are far more active than others, does that have to do with the house and the rooms and what occurred within the rooms? Or is it more of a geographical type thing of the property itself, and the structure seems to sit over this area and other parts sit over that area? What's your thoughts on that?
I think it could be a little bit of both, because, I mean, things have happened in every room. We had activity in every room in that house. And when you go back and you hear the stories from Andrea and her sisters, they experienced things in every room in the house. And then you have things like landlines that could really spark up activity, which I mean, I don't know if any of them are running under the Conjuring house.
Mm-hmm.
But every room was, from my personal experience, every room was active. And I know that every room was active years ago when the parents lived there.
Do you ever have any fear when you go into a house like this of something following you from the house? I know you do protection methods and things of that nature, but is that 100% foolproof? Could there sometimes be something that still manages to get through?
Yeah, I mean, it crosses my mind, but I keep my faith strong. I pray. Obviously, I don't want anything to follow me home and harm me. you know, I'm getting married next year. I don't want anything coming home and messing with my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. So I pray. I say my prayers. I bring my holy relics. I always have my holy water. And I just try to show no fear and just go in and do what I have to do.
When you bring in holy relics and things like that into a house like this, how are you using them? When are you bringing them out, and what are you doing with the relics when you're doing an investigation?
It's just the fact that they're with me. I keep them in my vest, and it's my faith, believing that, you know, these things are going to protect me. I mean, I've got third class relics of St. Padre Pio, St. Benedict, blessed medals, blessed St. Benedict medals, which is very powerful against the demonic. And it's just my faith. Mm-hmm. And you get a pretty good reaction from the demonic if you have these things. They don't like it. Especially, you know, if you're trying to help someone, these are things you want to put out.
Yeah.
To rid the area.
When you're doing an investigation like this, where it's not for, you know, helping someone calm their house down because they're living there, this is obviously, it's a different type case. And you're bringing relics like that. And I know, I understand it's for protection, but does it also at the same time, is it like going into it with like an egg beater into a house where it's just like, let's stir this shit up? I mean, you're not sitting there yelling at it or anything like that,
no,
but just the fact that you have it on you.
It's just the fact I have it on me. It's for my own personal protection. It's like, well, if something evil is going to try to mess with me, I've got these things that are on me that they don't want to get anywhere near.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my mindset is with that stuff.
Does it mute the spirits more, or does it the dark spirits more when you have those on you, or do you feel like it brings it out more? Because you could almost look at it either way.
I mean, I feel like it kind of keeps them at bay. It protects me. We'll still get activity,
yeah,
but I won't get affected, whereas like, you know, if you're in the presence of a demonic entity, I mean, you could feel it. You'll get nauseous. You mm-hmm. might even get sick. You have really bad headaches, things like that, getting scratched. I mean, I haven't gotten scratched in a really long time, mm-hmm. knock on wood. So, I always make sure I have these things with me. I always make sure.
Could an analogy be made on that to almost like, okay, someone wearing a raincoat out in a rainstorm, the raincoat designed for rain to keep it away.
Sure.
Versus someone who's just, you know, out there wearing a t-shirt in the rain. One is going to get far more wet than the other. You both know it's raining though.
Yes. It's a real good analogy there. Absolutely. Yes.
What in conclusion here with the future of this house? Obviously, you're not the owner of the house, but you do investigate it. Many people investigate it. What do you see the future of it being? Just a personal question, 10, 20 years down the road, what do you think the state of this house will be?
Well, I mean, the people that own it now, they're pretty happy doing what they're doing. I could see them staying there, to be honest with you, for a long time and just keep on doing what they're doing. At some point, if it was up to me, I mean, I would want to do like a legit investigation there. And when I say that, I mean, I would want to like I would want to bless the house. I would want to hit all four corners with blessed St. Benedict medals, like put them in the ground. I would want to kind of just get rid of whatever's there. And they just kind of want to keep it the way it is, and they don't want anybody to do anything like that, which is, it is what it is. Nobody's really living there.
Yeah.
It's just a haunted house that they let people come investigate, which is cool. But I see it just staying the way it is and letting people go and investigate it.
Do you feel like houses that are haunted and things that have demonic spirits in them, and haunted such a blanket term, do you feel, and this is your opinion, do you feel that when there's something like this that is so active, that does seem to have the potential to cause more harm than good to really anyone who happens to go into it, should places like that be essentially not, I don't want to say like, you don't not tearing the house down, but should the hauntings at some point be eradicated? Should someone attempt to eradicate a haunting if the possibility exists, or because the world that we live in today is very different than where Ed and Lorraine were when they were doing their work.
Yeah.
There weren't places like this that were just essentially, quote unquote, fun houses for investigating and researching, which is very interesting in itself. But what they were always, it seems, you know, they were trying to help families find peace. They were trying to help that. So that element is there with their time. This is that house, but you're not trying to help somebody find peace necessarily. But correct. Still, just in principle, should places like this, it's like a forest fire or something. You know, you could have, you, if there's a campfire that's unattended in a forest, you should probably put it out so it doesn't cause a forest fire. In some ways, that's kind of like how some of these properties are. And I'm not shaming or saying anything negative about anybody who owns these. I think it's extremely interesting to hear about this and the fact that we have places to go to and investigate at this level. But it, just as an investigator, as someone like yourself with very your strong religious beliefs in how all of this works, do you feel like places like this should at some point have a door closed to the other side within them if it can be done?
Well, like you said, we're living in a different day and age. There was no houses like this when the Warrens were doing their job, because I hate to use the term fun house, but there's all these houses that people can just go to.
Yeah.
I think right now, as it stands with the Conjuring House, everything's fine. They know what they're doing. You've got to be smart when you go there. My personal opinion, if anyone gets hurt, like really hurt there, then it's like, okay, we need to do something. We need to take care of everything that's going on here and try and put an end to this. But I do recall hearing Ed Warren say in an interview that what resides there is so dark and negative that he truly believed that nothing could rid that house and property of what is haunting it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see what the future holds for this place.
That wraps up our conversation with Eric Vitale of the New England Society for Paranormal Research on the Warren's team return to the Conjuring House. Thank you for supporting the program and keeping us on the air. We could not do this show without you. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.